Hello, everybody, and welcome to Goldbridge Saves Football. I'm Mark Goldbridge. I'm joined by Will Brazier. We've just had an amazing weekend with Manchester United winning the FA Cup, but there is a Ten Hag madness. There is a ridiculous offside rule that's about to be brought in as well. The media's in the mud. Pep is in the mud. So much to talk about, and as well as madness in the boardrooms of so many football clubs, Will. How are you doing, and what are you thinking?
I had a great Saturday yesterday. Lauren cooked some chicken wings, some fresh, sat down with a pint of Cornish Rattler to watch the FA Cup final, some wings, and it was just a fantastic afternoon because, you know, I've got skin in the game now. You've gone from colleague to friend, and it's great when your friends do well. So it was fantastic to see Manchester United knock down the dominance of Manchester City, but with the backdrop of this Erik ten Hag thing, where are we going? What's going on? He's in charge. Is he in charge? I don't know. Tell me more.
Well, I just think, you know, for Manchester United fans and players and Ten Hag, it was just absolutely fantastic. I mean, Manchester City are the best team in the world, certainly the best team in the league anyway. And I don't think anybody gave as much chance in it. And it was a very, very, very good performance. We were the better team in the first half, 2-0. Second half, you're going to have to defend a bit. But look, an absolutely fantastic result. But I've got to say, even now, after the event, I'm sort of sat there, probably like many Manchester United fans and many non-Man United fans looking at it and just bewildered by when Ineos came into Manchester United. I didn't want them. I wanted Qatar because they were the only ones representing a full sale and a removal of the Glazers. But we've given Ineos our trust based on what are coming across as lies at the moment. You know, so Jim Ratcliffe has publicly said he admires Arsenal, what they've done with Arteta, standing by him when there was external noise to get rid of him. He's spoken about how it's really important to engage with fans and listen to fans. And yet on Friday, we get Ten Hag sacked because the media have got hold of the fact that Man United have been talking to other managers. Now, apparently Ineos aren't very happy about this, but the only evidence of Ineos not looking happy to me, Will, was looking at Sir Jim Ratcliffe on the sideline throughout that game yesterday with Sir Alex Ferguson like a little kid bouncing about, loving it. And Sir Jim Ratcliffe looking like a guy who shit himself and doesn't know where to move because it just, I'm bewildered by it. And even though I'm really happy today, I'm still like, what the hell are we doing? This guy's won two trophies in 2 years. Our two goal scorers are teenagers. He's developing the youth. He's had a hard season. He's still won a trophy. Newcastle aren't in Europe anymore because we are. Chelsea are in the Conference League. And we want to start at ground zero again. I just don't get it.
And also, I think it, regardless of the result yesterday, like when it got back to 2-1, I was like, here we go, City could equalise. But even I'd got to that point where when that game's on the line and Ten Hag's future's on the line, you've seen it so many times with different managers. I've had it at Blues. I'm sure you've had it with Man United and other fans have had it with their clubs. When that speculation starts and you go into a game like that, the players either down tools or they're saying, we're sending a message here and we're backing the manager. And it was quite clear and quite evident from the first whistle that not only were they organised, but the work rate off the ball and when those little moments came up, that they were at it and they were on it and they were doing it for Ten Hag. So that's probably why Sir Jim's got his knickers in the twist at the start point. And then also with the backdrop of like, yeah, I think I tweeted out saying to win two trophies in two seasons is like, as a football fan, that is so hard to do. Like, I know Manchester United fans are so used to success and we're used to getting it all the time. But to do that in back-to-back seasons is staggering. Plus the backdrop of Manchester City doing what they do. They're an absolute juggernaut coming off the back of a treble. So to disrupt that with the season that they've had, and when you do look into it, the injuries as well, like there's just no way you're sending the right message coming in as owners that getting rid of Ten Hag is the right thing to do.
It's a weird thing, and we've spoken about it this season, but look, obviously I was watching it on the BBC. Let's shout out the ITV, they had it as well, but I watched it on the BBC. You got Lineker and Shearer interviewing the FA Cup winning manager, who, in light of what you've just said there, is a massive achievement against an amazing Man City team, and they deserve to win. And he comes onto the TV screen to be interviewed by Gary Lineker, and it's like he's being trialed for murder. It was just unbelievable TV. And then Shearer pops up with, I think Ten Hag said, look, the media's made it really hard for us. You know, I've been saying all season I've got injuries, but it's not been an excuse. And then Shearer jumps in, but yeah, well, that's true. You know, you played really well today, but then the rest of the season, you played really badly. And then I heard Dion Dublin talking about it later, and I was like, you're paid good money as ex-players to analyse football, right? If you don't understand why Man United played well in that final and then have been bad all season, You're a bloody idiot. Like, Arsenal went to the Etihad and got a 0-0 draw. And if they didn't have Saliba and Gabriel, it wouldn't have happened. So the reason Man United played well yesterday is because we had two centre-backs in Martinez and Varane who can deal with Haaland and force Man City to have to take long shots, which Pep doesn't want to do. That's the difference. The injuries, and even in that final yesterday, Will, no left-back, Casemiro was out again. The two centre-backs weren't match fit. Martinez had to come off after 70 minutes. So it was even yesterday we should have got beat because we're not at our best. And yet people are still jumping on him. And what really annoyed me yesterday was that it was the media pile-on about his job. And it's got nothing to do with him. You know, that whole story that came out was a disgrace on Friday. And I think the bewilderment of Ten Hag, it was almost like a rabbit in the headlights. I don't think he can understand why he was being asked about his job when he's just won an FA Cup final and he's not the guy that's thinking of leaving. And it's just this toxic media. And what tops it all off for me is you've got Erik ten Hag, the winning against Man City, against all odds, being questioned about his future. You've got Pep Guardiola, who basically, they may as well polish his shoes but whilst kissing his arse. And this is a guy who's got 115 charges against him. But nothing about, well, no, we can't talk about that. Let's throw Ten Hag under the bus. And I'm disgusted by it. I'm disgusted in Ineos. I'm disgusted in the media. And I just think that even though we've won yesterday, the treatment of Erik Ten Hag over the last few months is bordering on bullying as far as I'm concerned.
And also within that as well, I think the best thing for him is PR's gone through the roof, probably in terms of Manchester United fans and even from me. Like I really wanted him to win yesterday because of that sort of, obviously the story that had come out. And then even in the post-match interviews with Shearer, and then I saw the ones in the post-match press conference as well, he was almost holding journalists and pundits to account, which is the way it should be, because we probably lull ourselves into a false sense of security of like, oh, this is just the way it has to be, of like these ex-players getting to say what they want. And the way Shearer was almost getting, like, you could see him visibly getting angry that Ten Hag was challenging him, because, you know, he's not used to that as a pundit. And it ties back to what we said, like that when those circle of pundits everywhere you go, from Sky to ITV to BBC, are just full of, it's all ex-players, and like they're not fans. Like they are a certain degree of fan, but they're not the sort of fans on the terrace, fans who have been following the clubs. And I just think there's this constant, I mean, we've talked about it so many times with the overlap, haven't you, where they put the fan creators on the outside looking in, and it's like, oh, can I ask a question? And it's like, we're speaking as fans, so I don't understand why that makes, you know, for the insight and the intricacy of things on the pitch and in the dressing room, I totally understand that from getting pundits involved. But there should be a mix going forward, and something needs to change, because, yeah, Shearer looked like Charlie Nicholas when Jeff Stelling was calling him out about his glasses a few years ago, if you remember that one. He just got so irate and angry for no reason at all. Like, the man's just won an FA Cup. Let him speak.
Let him speak, Simon. Look, you raise a good point. Fan opinion's what I've built a career on. And, you know, this podcast is about that. We haven't got the TV rights to the FA Cup or the Premier League. So we're not in a relationship where it's in our interest to, you know, cover up what's happening. And I understand that. Look, you know, at the end of the day, using VAR as an example, if you've paid millions and millions and millions of pounds for the Premier League, you're not going to be allowed to sit on some channel that's paid for that and go, you know what, the Premier League's corrupt, it's broken, it's not corrupt, but you know what I mean, it's like it's broken. Because you know, it's not, people need to wake up to the mainstream. It is not a fair representation. I personally think Lineker and Shearer speak better on their podcast than they do on the BBC, and they get paid a lot more for that. So, you know, what's going on there? It's diluted dictatorship media because of the relationships they have, quite rightly, with the media. But I feel that the fans are the most important thing. And I wanted to ask you, because you're not a Manchester United fan, when you look at the Ten Hag situation, it's not been a great season. Would you keep him? But what I would say to that, from my point of view, is everyone knows my stance, but I've never witnessed a situation whereby you've got somebody who's got probably 90% of the fan base behind him at the moment who want him to have another season, and an owner would sack him. I mean, that's the sort of thing Mike Ashley does at Newcastle. This is Manchester United and a new vision. The Glazers did a lot wrong, but when they sacked Ole, Mourinho, Van Gaal and Moyes, to be fair, the fans did agree with it. You know, we were sacking too many managers, but we were just saying, well, they keep appointing the wrong one. If Ineos's first action is to sack a manager that the majority of the fans want, Are they not worse than the Glazers?
Well, it also ties in. I mean, imagine how much of a great PR play if this is already sort of understood from Ineos. It's a bit like your WWE in terms of, imagine if Ineos understood the subtleties of the media and they already know that they're getting rid of Ten Hag, they're going into a tricky game against Man City, just feed out a little line that they're looking for a new manager, knowing they're keeping Ten Hag, and then that rapturous support goes from a 50, 60% Ten Hag in, 90% now, people like me supporting Ten Hag. Just imagine if that was the PR play.
Yeah, exactly. But from the outside looking in, does it look weird at Manchester United to be doing or even contemplating it?
Yeah, just because, like I said, getting trophies is the hardest thing in football. I think when you become a juggernaut like Man City, Liverpool, like you were before, you actually forget that winning and having those days out at Wembley is the essence of football, isn't it? That's why you get up in the morning to go to the fourth round tie away at Burton Albion and get them through. So having those days at Wembley and winning those trophies is football for me. And I don't think that should be forgotten for, like, you see people speaking about, well, Ineos have got to get their man in because it's part of the new vision and whatever. But, like, there's no obvious candidate, which we've been speaking about for weeks, which makes this decision even more crazy. And the fast nature of football as well was that we're going into a Euros where the best players in the world are going to be at the Copa America in the Euros. So if you've not got your manager right and your recruitment right before that, you're going to be playing second fiddle. You're going to be one step behind going into the season. I find it crazy the amount of leaks that come out of Manchester United. I find it how not on song everybody is at the club. But in a weird way, this has almost been a unifier. And if I was Ineos, I think you just have to take stock of the decision you were probably going to make and be like, well, let's put the brake pedal on. Let's look at what's out there. And let's keep Erik ten Hag in charge for next season.
There's a weird thing going on at football at the moment, and this will embrace everybody because it could be coming to a football club near you soon. I personally think that this season has probably been one of the worst ones for football fans in a long time. The amount of minutes we play now extra has led to a massive increase in injuries, fact. The officiating, VAR, has led to massive trauma and issues for football fans, fact. And we've now got this ownership model that's creeping into the Premier League, which is just abhorrent. And I think I worry for football fans because I don't want to be a past merchant, but I look back on football 10, 15, 20 years ago, and it was in a better place in relation to a lot of things. And you look at what Chelsea did with Pochettino, and you look at what Man United are trying to do with Ten Hag, and then you try and get your head around why Chelsea want to sack Pochettino for McKenna or Man United want to sack Ten Hag for McKenna. And I go, well, I'm almost living in a parallel universe here because he's a good young coach, but he finished second in the championship with Ipswich and he's taking Pochettino's job at Chelsea or Ten Hag's job at Man United. And I don't know why. And this is the sort of thing, Will, that Watford used to do where you'd see they'd sacked another manager and you'd just go, yeah, they're a shit-run club. What a joke. But now you've got, you know, traditional top six clubs doing it. And it's like, there's no blueprint for this, by the way. Real Madrid do it. They run a club by committee. But even then, someone like Ancelotti or Zidane would have a say. Chelsea and Man United are clearly trying to build boardrooms that run everything and put a puppet in charge who just coaches the team.
And also it's this sort of like rush for youth when I'm all up for, especially for English managers and British managers getting a chance at higher levels in the Premier League, because ultimately, hopefully that's better for the national game and everything that ties into that. But just this clamour and this rush to be like, well, he's got a clear philosophy at Ipswich, let's bring that into Manchester United. I mean, that's absolutely ludicrous. It wouldn't happen on Football Manager. It wouldn't happen on FIFA Career Mode. And they're probably becoming more realistic than football is right now, because there's just this clamour, this rush to have this, like, almost like this prized asset that, you know, well, we can have him for the next 10 years and he's going to deliver this. When in reality, like, the jump is absolutely massive. And I don't know if it ties into, like, you know, to obviously tactic systems and formulas are so massive now. And obviously there's people that analyse that, and that's more to the fore with everything going on. But, you know, you mentioned Real Madrid there, and Ancelotti is the perfect sort of antidote for all of that, isn't he? Because, you know, those performances at Manchester City, well, what we probably call vintage shithouse performances, and that's the Real Madrid manager knowing the situation, being pragmatic, and he's one of the most successful managers in world football. So I don't think we should, you know, football is two ways, isn't it? Everyone's like, what are we going to do? But if you're a Man United, you probably need to be looking at, well, how do we counter, or how do we do this and how do we do that? And those younger managers, I do worry about.
Yeah, I just don't get it. Everyone's entitled to an opinion. Get your comments in. I just do not agree with... I didn't agree with Chelsea getting rid of Pochettino, and I don't agree with Man United getting rid of Ten Hag. And ultimately, I've got no problem with managers going if they've had bad seasons, but I think Pochettino, Eddie Howe and Ten Hag have had very similar seasons, and I don't expect... Well, maybe Newcastle will sack Eddie Howe. Maybe we'll get that bombshell as well, but they've all had mitigating circumstances. They're all good coaches, and I think they're all building things that look, history shows that time is key. Klopp at Liverpool, Arteta at Arsenal, you know, Sir Alex years ago. You need time to build from a mess. But what we as football fans suffer again, because we're just sitting in the background. We're sitting in the background observing the experts run our football club that we love. And basically Chelsea have got this boardroom where they want to run things. And Pochettino has said, I don't want you to sell Conor Gallagher. I don't want you to sell Chalobah, and I don't want you to buy this player. And they've gone, well, we are. And if you don't like it, you go. And then he goes, well, it's not that I don't like it. It's just that you're going to do it. It's going to make my job harder, and then I will lose my job or lose my reputation on it. I need to have some say. You're not having a say. So Chelsea go, let's get a manager that will just take it. And Man United want to do the same. And you end up with a puppet in charge then. You know, they're in a press conference and they're bland. And I don't want that. I want Jurgen Klopp. I want Pep Guardiola. I want Ange. I want these personable managers that are ingrained with the football club and the fans. And Chelsea and Man United just seem to be following this blueprint that I don't see how it's going to be successful. And certainly not in an era where Pep Guardiola's still around. Maybe they're looking at when he goes, we might get it. But I just don't like it at all. And it's baffling. And I think the football fan loses as well.
Mark, if it's all right for you, I'd like to hear from our halftime sponsors. And also, it just comes after a day of such like joy and celebrations. If you're a Manchester United fan, like, it's almost having to, for us to have to be like, well, let's have a look at that and celebrate that, because that second goal was absolutely a work of art, finished off by Kobbie Mainoo, who obviously you mentioned an academy product and such an exciting thing if you're a Manchester United manager. And I was just falling back, and obviously it was all over Twitter yesterday, but like, you know, you speak about man management, and maybe because of his time in England, like, we've not really attached that to Ten Hag. But then you look back to the end of that Carabao Cup final when Mainoo was on the pitch and he's got his arm around him and he's supposed to have said, like, you know, this can be what you're doing one day. And then you flash forward over like 12, 13 months and he's doing that. So there's so much to be promising for Manchester United, especially with the what's going on in the league, of like, there's up for grabs. I think third and fourth is up for grab next season, which will be great for Manchester United, plus the whole core of that team. So I really do hope he stays, and I'm probably Ten Hag in for not just next season but maybe two or three seasons now, and that's probably a bit fickle of me, but that's just because of the weekend that he's had. And if he can be like that punchy in the media every time, I think that almost, it's like a embraces that sort of club mentality where you can be like, we're Man United and we're going out fighting, if it's pundits, if it's press conferences, if it's like, you know, get that sort of built-in mentality where you're doing that.
Yeah, definitely. I think that with regards to, it'd be very interesting. I mean, we've almost got football clubs being run by committee here, and it's the parallels between Chelsea and Manchester United are quite similar. You know, Chelsea have gone and made another decision that's not really what the fans expected, and I just think the dilution of fan opinion is happening right in front of our eyes. The VAR thing is just completely and utterly beyond reproach, really. It's like, you know, we've been complaining about it all season. We've been ignored. Now being ignored by football clubs. It's a madness to me. And I think that we need to somehow try and wrestle it back. But you're a very powerless football fan at the moment when you're subjected to these constant bad decisions. The media is trying to, you know, blind you with, you know, manipulation, and then you've got football clubs who aren't listening to you. It's hard because it's meant to be the people's game. And look, thank God we've got podcasts like this and fan content like we do, because I just think it's probably one of the most challenging times to be a football fan at the moment. And it could get even more challenging for United fans who should be celebrating. But of course, the flip side of this, Will, is we mustn't laugh, is that Man United winning puts Man United into the Europa League, Chelsea into the Conference League, and Newcastle out. I mean, I'd sort of thought midweek that Chelsea and Newcastle fans would be Man City fans, understandably, but I didn't really know. I was so happy yesterday, like enjoying it, that I didn't really notice it. But that's a horrible end to the season for them. You know, the Conference League's an absolute joke, but you'd take it over something. Newcastle end up with nothing, and Chelsea end up in the Conference League.
I actually think, for the way it's been for Newcastle this year, just, and it was going to be Conference League, that actually isn't too bad of an outcome, just because of what they're walking into the summer. I'm not going to turn into what they were doing on TalkSport with, we need to sell, we don't need to sell Gabby, but they might have to sell some players with Isak and Bruno, looking, you know, obviously with the FFPP. I got that one wrong again. But I think having a clear season where you can just be a bit more structured in terms of, because it's a squad that can do well potentially in the Conference League, but not to the levels that they'd like to do, and obviously with the money that they want to spend. So maybe a more gradual build is actually a little bit better for them. If you're a Newcastle fan, you're going home and away, you want those away days. But I actually don't think, I'd be intrigued to see what they're going to bring in this summer, basically.
Yeah, definitely. Talking about one thing that might get brought in this summer, we've got to talk about it. It's quite a big topic. This is what we're here to do on Goldbridge Saves Football. Get your comments in on this one. Arsene Wenger, who has a good legacy in football, but has also got a legacy for bringing in stupid ideas. He wants to revolutionise the offside rule, whereby effectively you're only offside if you are clear of a defender. So if your foot or half your arm or half your body are ahead, it's not offside. It's got to be clear daylight. I saw it because Jamie Carragher tweeted about it, and I replied to him, and I basically said, this is just another death knell for football. It's creating a bit of debate. What are your initial thoughts on it, Will?
We're coming off the back of a season where we've just spoke about how the current officials can't implement VAR, which, compared to that, is probably very easy to implement. So, I mean, clear and obvious is hard this year. Having clear light between the defenders, if that gets implemented in, I mean, that's all we'll be talking about. I don't understand. Arsene Wenger's literally turned into the demon headmaster as soon as he's gone into this role. I feel he just pulls a rule. He's got a box of different rules. He just pulls one out of his arse each day and goes, yeah, well, I'll leak that one into the media. We'll have a go at that. Like, it's just crazy. There's so many different problems with football, and the one that you're not going to solve. They've sort of, for us, the one we said is that UEFA have got the perfect system with offsides like that. So I think you spoke about throw-ins before becoming kick-ins. I think there's been the blue card thing. It literally feels like an eight-year-old it's like an eight-year-old committee having a birthday party going, what would you like to do with football? Change it.
I've played the game, and I played centre-back at Anfield last week, and I'm telling you now, if you are a centre-back and you know that the forward is only offside if he's a clear length ahead of you in relation to his whole body, then that is going to make you go and stand on the edge of the penalty box. And then you're going to lose high-line football. You're going to lose high pressing. I mean, Arsene Wenger is an architect of football, and he's a traditional manager that I think we want to see more of in football. But I think you do hit a point in life where you're just trying to do something for your legacy that really doesn't do anything for your legacy. I mean, we offside this season, obviously we had the Liverpool one, which was almost an opportunity for Wenger, I think, because when you've got the technology that's in the Champions League and in the World Cup and will be in the Euros, it's fine. The technology will say he's off by an inch, he's off by 2 inches, and that's all you want. There's nothing wrong with offside. Like, offside is not a negative thing. The issue is making the decision be correct. You don't need to change offside to give the attacking team a massive advantage. Like, high lines happen because of offside. Look at Aston Villa. So, and high lines lead to better football because it's more compact. You play higher up the pitch, counters, etc. So if you remove offside and make it that you've got to be a whole body length before you're offside, then we're just going to change the game for the worse. It's going to become more of a chess match. It's going to become more spread out. It's going to be more defensive. But it's almost like what Ineos are trying to do with Ten Hag and what Chelsea did with Pochettino and what the PGMOL have done with VAR. It wouldn't surprise me if we did it, because adding 10 minutes onto the end of every game so we get more injuries. Every decision around football at the moment seems to be not for the betterment of football, but for diluting the enjoyment of the football fan. Every decision seems to be bad at the moment. And this, to me, would just be another horrific decision.
And also, like, the last thing you want to do is make offsides subjective, because there's so many subjective decisions in football that we're arguing about every week that VAR was supposed to help. Imagine it going to the screen and, like, you not knowing, like, of, like, there's so much different, there's so many things that could go wrong with that I just don't understand why it's even been spouted out by a man who has really such power and influence like Wenger, when, like, offsides is the least of our problems. Maybe let's put some money into training the referees to make them better at the jobs rather than trying to add another layer of complexity to it.
Yeah, definitely. I just not for it at all. I think it's a really bad idea, but it wouldn't surprise me if they brought it in. I did want to just touch on the season in general. I mean, I sort of jinxed Leverkusen last week, saying that they're the best invincible side ever, and literally within days they lost to Atalanta. What a good performance was that from them. But they did win the domestic double as well. It's been an interesting season now that we know everybody domestically that's won everything. Man City could have done a quadruple. They ended up with just one trophy at the end of it, which I think fits in with what I've said, that they're not at their best. They're a 7.5 for me this year. And I think, looking back on it, we know who's in the top four. We know who's in Europe now. The big losers are probably Newcastle and Brighton. They've had bad seasons. Chelsea, probably halfway through, would have took the Conference League. Man United, Europa League's a good end to the season. Villa, brilliant to be in Europe and in the Champions League. Spurs get Europa League as well. Arsenal, Liverpool won a trophy. Arsenal won nothing but came second. I do think Man City should have ended up with nothing this year, though. I think they've done well to get the league.
I was just going to say, do you think now that Man United have won the FA Cup, which is a bit superior to the Carabao Cup, Arsenal have actually come away with no trophies, do you think Man United have had a better season than Arsenal and Liverpool?
Well, I've heard this nonsense before, and he tweeted it again, Goldstein on TalkSport. I mean, he doesn't believe it. He's just doing it for notoriety. There's no way that Man United are better than Arsenal, for a start. I get the point of saying, have Man United had a better season? Well, trophies are better than nothing, but what United fans have been through this season, there's no way we've had a better season than Arsenal. So what I'm saying with that is that if you said at me at the end of the season, we'd have the season we've had, but we'd win the FA Cup, or you can have Arsenal's season, I would take Arsenal's season, because they're in a better place, they play better football, they've got a better squad, and they probably should have won the league. And next season, they may well win the league, whereas Man United won't. And it's the big prizes that you're meant to be playing for. I think for Man United to get out of it with an FA Cup is brilliant, but it's not a better season. Not in my mind. I mean, it's been a horrible season. Devastated by injury, a crap ownership, off-field activity, no left back, no January transfer window activity. So to get an FA Cup, our season rested on one game. It was a bit like a one-game season, really. And I've watched every Man United game, and it's been appalling because of the reasons listed there. But then I've watched Arsenal a lot, and they've been brilliant. And ultimately, they've lost out to a juggernaut. If Man City weren't in this league, then Arsenal would be title holders and the best team in England. So I think it's a good point in the sense of, would you rather have a trophy or be Arsenal? But for Man United, that trophy is so big. It's for the fans. It's for the players. It's for the manager. But for Arsenal, the only thing I would say about Arsenal, Will, is why haven't they won a trophy in the last 2 years? Like, they should have won a trophy. Like, they're in a better position. They've had a better season. But I suppose I would ask why they haven't won a trophy, because the Premier League's hard to win. The Champions League's hard to win. But have they took their eye off the ball in the cups?
Well, also football, like, Arsenal at the moment is still if, buts, and maybes, isn't it? They're on the right trajectory. Mm. They're going in the right way. But, like, you know, Tottenham were doing this a couple of years ago and that led to nothing. You could say, I do think, you know, and Arteta has got an FA Cup, but I do think Arsenal will come good. But at the moment, like you, in the cold light of day, Man United are walking away with the trophy from the end of the season and Arsenal aren't. And like, I just go back to it, maybe because I'm so far down the football pyramid now that those days seem far away. But having a trophy and having that day as a fan and those moments that you had yesterday, for me, that is football. Not like, oh, we've got second place and we're building a fantastic project. If that leads to a Premier League and a Championship, brilliant. That's what I remember, but not the at the moment, it's just up in the air, isn't it? So I understand where you mean, like, you'd rather be an Arsenal fan for the where they're going, but yeah, to have that trophy and FA Cup in the bag is absolutely massive.
Well, it's a frustration of mine that I've said before of the likes of Fulham and Crystal Palace and everyone like that, where you get the third round of the FA Cup and they put out the reserves. And I'm like, people need to start waking up to this. It's very, 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 very obvious when you look at Man United in the FA Cup final, Liverpool in the Carabao Cup final, Man United in the Carabao Cup final last year, and Man United were in the FA Cup final last year as well, and we lost to Man City. There is and Ten Hag has figured this out, and I think Klopp's figured it out all through his career, and Pep's figured it out as well. Maybe Arteta hasn't figured it out. Maybe some other clubs don't figure it out. If the FA Cup didn't exist, Newcastle, Chelsea, Spurs, Villa have all had a better season than Man United. But because Man United have got to the FA Cup final and won it, we've had a better season than Newcastle, we've had a better season than Chelsea, we've had a better season than Spurs. I mean, Villa getting in the Champions League is almost a trophy for them. But my point is, people need to respect the Cups a little bit more. And I think they take their eyes off the Cup because they're like, too many games, not really worth it. Man United have been to two FA Cup finals in a row. All right, Man City, take it seriously. But we did beat them yesterday legitimately. And now we've got a trophy and now we're in Europe. So I think that when you look at Arsenal and Spurs, you sort of go, why are you not investing more? Now, for Arsenal, it might be that, look, we've always said their squad's not that big. They're going for the Champions League and they're going for the Premier League and they're the priorities. Maybe they haven't really got the resources to go for the Cups as well. But it is a wake-up call for the other clubs. Crystal Palace have finished the season so well. If they could have found a way into the quarterfinal of the FA Cup, you'd fancy them. So I think this has always been a frustration for me, how clubs don't respect the Premier League, don't respect the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Well, look at it. Man United's whole season is now a good season because we respected the FA Cup. And I think more clubs should do it because, you know, Arsenal fans will be screaming, of course we've had a better season. And I think you have. But you didn't win anything and Man United did. And I think trophies are always going to be important. And, you know, we've rescued our season with that. And there's a lot better teams than us who weren't even in the final.
Speaking of finals, I'm off to one today. This podcast will be out by the time of recording. But Leeds versus Southampton, who are you going for and why?
Biggest money game in the world, apparently. Not sure it is, but, you know, it's a massive one. I always feel sorry for the teams when they lose this, and there always seems to be a lot of drama in these games as well. I've said Southampton all along because I felt Leeds had lost their momentum, but I think they've found it again now. So I think it's going to be close. I wouldn't be surprised if this ended up with another penalty shootout, but I'd like Leeds back in it because they're a massive rival of Man United. So it's another two good games. You know, Leeds is a bigger game than Southampton, but I just have a feeling Southampton will get it done. Will, what about you?
Well, I'll actually be on the big screen at halftime. I was going to say, if you're there, give me a wave or some abuse, but the podcast is already out. I am going for Leeds. I've just been looking into it this morning. I think that Norwich performance, although Norwich was so bad, that front four of Leeds is actually very scary. And I think Southampton need everything to go right for their performance to go well. So it'd be good to get them back in. One final Championship thing as well. A man that was in the studio yesterday, Wayne Rooney, back in Football Management at Plymouth Argyle.
Are you jealous? Can't
believe it. I had a few tweets in the drafts. I thought, no, just let it go now. You've had your time with him. Pieface has got him now. Obviously, literally playing. He's gone from playing pro clubs with Pieface, from not knowing the Cornish accent, to be, I mean, now he's going to commute from Cheshire down to Plymouth every day. God knows.
He's going to have to get a flat. It's a long drive. A lot of people will be doing it this half term as well. And some of them will be listening to this stuck in the traffic to it, let's be honest. But look, I'm not a Birmingham City fan. You are. I know you were never hot on Rooney, but I just felt that it was a you know, it's a shame it didn't work out, because to have a manager like that at a club like that, it's massive exposure. I hope it works out for him at Plymouth. It's funny that he's only just signed up for the overlap and now he's gone to Plymouth. So I can't imagine he's going to carry on doing both. Maybe he will. Yeah, it is interesting. He obviously wants to do the management thing, doesn't he? And Plymouth will be a hard job.
Plymouth's going to be a hard job, obviously staying up on the last day at the expense of us. So, but maybe it sort of ties into when he was at Derby County, and obviously with the points deduction of that mentality of like us against the world. Maybe he's more suited to a club like that. We've spoken so much over the last couple of weeks of, like, you know, Jurgen Klopp and Liverpool being the right fit. Will Rooney and Plymouth Argyle, which feels like a Football Manager 10-year save down the line, be the perfect fit?
Yeah, well, I hope he does well. It's always, you know,
not me.
No, you don't.
I hope Pye does well.
Yeah, well, I bet Pye's getting really excited. There might be all sorts of link-ups he can do with it. He might have him on the bloody bench with him. You never know. It's
really might be
it's exciting.
With
yeah, going streaming till 3 o'clock in the morning, then going on a walk to Tesco's at four. Yeah, look, it's been a funny old season, and it finishes with Wayne Rooney managing at Plymouth Argyle. In relation to the podcast, just a quick one here that we've recorded on Bank Holiday weekend, so we put it out a little bit early. We're not going to be doing the Friday ones anymore because obviously they're all about the preview, really, but we will be keeping up with the weekly ones, and the Euros is on the horizon, and we've got That's Football on YouTube. And next week, I'm going to be talking about quite a big development as well, which we're going to talk about, so we'll mention that. I nearly said what it was then, which would sort of take away from what it's going to be next week. So,
well, let's just say I'm not here next week, and it might be to do with that.
Yeah, well, you are on the bit where I talk about it, so you will be here.
Yeah, I was just doing a bit
because we've already recorded it.
They didn't know that.
Yeah, but it could be me sacking you, and then
that's
you agreed
the joke.
To it. Yeah,
you've ruined my joke.
Okay, then. Sorry, ruined it. Thanks everyone for tuning in. As always, get your comments in, but really do. I want to get some comments that, because next week we're going to do a bit of a review on the season as well as a few other bits and looking ahead, summer of course. But what are your standout things from the season, good and bad? For me, you know, I think ownership's a football club, PGMOL, media, just so many bad things, minutes added on. Get your lists in, get your comments in. Thanks for coming on, Will.
No, thanks for having me, Mark.
And we'll speak to you later. Take care.